what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I wanna know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
Welcome to Sun Talk. I'm your host, Rich Kirshner. Our guest today is legendary baseball keyboard player Bobby Freeman. Bobby, how are you doing these days?
I'm doing great. I'm blessed to be able to do what I love to do, playing the organ, keyboards, as a professional my whole life. So, and I'm still able to do it.
Now, I met you when you were playing for the Phoenix Firebirds years ago, and I was so proud of you that you got the Diamondbacks job. Who else could have gotten that job besides you?
Well, it was probably rigged, but it's just been a blessing, I guess, spending the 9 years out in the 116-degree heat, as you know, starting with Phoenix Community Stadium and then Scottsdale Stadium. And you came in color guard. Is that correct, at Scottsdale?
That's correct. I was with the Air National Guard, and you would play the Air Force song when we would march out. We were so geeked about that, you know. It's like, wow, he's paying attention to us. And it's our, I didn't have
well,
to ask
too.
You.
No, you didn't have to ask me. Yeah, I tried to pay attention. So I remember you were out there. And yeah, I put in my 9 years in the minors, just like the players and on the field. And I would tell people that I had a short baseball career in high school, but I sat on the bench most of the game. And now I've done it for 29 years with the Diamondbacks, you know, sitting on the bench the whole game.
Now, but, where do you sit in specifically so people can seek you out? And I kept telling Lori, I'm going to have to go visit Bobby, but I don't know where he's at in the stadium. You know, it's a large stadium.
Yes, I'm up in left field, section 332, upper concourse, and the area is called the Sandlot. And it's a family area. So I'm up there with all the kids. And it was always talked about on the major league level that most of the organists are in a booth somewhere. And the folks that hired me on with the Diamondbacks and had mentioned we'd like to get you out with the crowd, and we didn't have a spot for me. And then when the Sandlot was developed, probably in 2005 or six, they said, can we try the organ out there? I said, yeah, as long as I can see home plate. And I'm right by the foul pole, and I have a clear shot to home plate because I have to see when the batter's ready to bat and the whole action of the game. And now I also have to be able to see the pitch clock because at 10 seconds I have to stop all audio. So I can see the pitch clock, I can see home plate. And then the best thing about Sandlot is I'm right out there on a stage open to the fans. So I can do autographs and selfies, and I sign headshots and bats and balls and cell phone cases and shoes and caps, hats, whatever thrown at me. And so I have constant interaction with the fans the whole game, and I love it, just like I did at the Firebirds. I was right behind home plate.
Yes, you were. And now you mentioned the pitch clock that MLD recently introduced. Has that provided any challenges for you?
There is, but I am fortunate enough that I play all the spring training games since the team does train here in Scottsdale at Salt River Fields. So I was always available to the pitch clock for 2 years prior to when we introduced it to major league games. So I was very familiar with the pitch clock. And the thing that I had to do with the pitch clock is, like, if there's a foul ball, I have to know it's going foul, and then I start playing my chance, like, right now. Because if I don't do it instantly, I won't be able to hit that 10-second cutoff. So I have had zero problem working with the pitch clock. I had a couple years with the spring training working with it. So by the time I came to the big ballpark, I was ready for it. No problem.
Well, practice through precision.
Yeah, the other thing you have to learn, too, is just by doing it, is when the pitch clock will go down to 10, 9 seconds, but all of a sudden the batter calls timeout. So I don't take my eyes off that batter because now he gets an extra 10 seconds, and that gives me the opportunity to prolong that chance, especially if it's let's go D-backs. So I just keep going. So it's a challenge, but it keeps me on my toes and what I do.
Well, that's – hey – Practice your precision. I could, yeah. I've heard it in my life, and you do it for a perfect. I'm so happy for you, Bobby, that you're still able to do that, that you're still enjoying it. You have the opportunity, and you set the standard, if I may.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I've actually played injured. MLB requested out at Salt River Fields 2 years ago that I would come out and play for the championship, all-star championship game for the fall ball players. And I said, well, I just had foot surgery, and I was on I couldn't step on the foot at all. I said, I'll come and play, and I have a cast on, but I'm going to have to come in a wheelchair. I don't want to scare everybody. Non-weight bearing, that's what it was. And so I actually played the game. I rolled in with a wheelchair, and I had the cast on. People are coming up to me going, I heard you have a cast on. I go, yeah. Yeah, I said, you don't hold back a Midwest kid from Cleveland, Ohio, you know, because he's got a cast on his foot. You know, I played the game, and it was so fun, and I got so much very sweet attention for it. I didn't mean for that, but I said, no, I'm working. I want to play this game. And so anything like that's not going to stop me from being on the bench.
Well, I have observed when keyboard players play, there are foot pedals that need to be hit. Or do you? How did you do that?
With
your bad foot?
I had a cast on it. Yeah, it was okay. I just turned my foot to an angle. It was not a problem. A lot of the players nowadays don't use foot pedals because they don't come up what I call the old days. In the old days, we had to have the bass. We didn't have the fancy keyboards. It was the organ and you. And I just don't want to get away from not playing the foot pedals. So when I do use the keyboard above with all the backgrounds and the sounds and I use the organ as a lead, I take the bass out of the keyboard. I still want to do it with my foot. And it's amazing because when fans come up to watch me play, whether it be their dad, mom, grandma, grandpa, or the little kids themselves, they'll stare at my foot.
What's he doing with his foot, mommy? You know, don't ask.
Yeah, what sound does that make? And I said, hear that big, loud bass, low bass? That's my foot. Well, how do you know which pedal to push? I said, I have high eyeballs in the back of my foot, and then they look over. It's so cute.
That's great.
It's just the interaction is what it's about, because that fan, whether it's dad, mom, grandma, grandpa, or the kids, they're going to have a positive. I'm going to make sure they have a positive experience while they're at the ballpark, and that people come back to points of pleasure. And when I hear the parents say, oh, Zach wanted to come see Mr. Freeman before we go to our seat. That's why.
That's all it takes. Yeah, no kidding.
You make a fan for life, because they come to the park, they want to get a player's autograph, and then they want to get Baxter's autograph. So I'm kind of like the last one they come to, but that's great. At least they're going to go home with something, a takeaway, you know, whether it's my headshot, whatever, and I hear the stories. Oh, your picture's on our refrigerator, and that just makes, you know, my wanting to always come back. No plans of retirement, because why would you retire from something you love?
And I've heard you quoted as saying, "You're not working every day. You love what you do."
No, I don't go to the ballpark to work. Take me out to the ball game and go there to play it. And it's not a job. My vocation of music, love for music, and love for baseball. How does it get any better?
Sure.
And being with the fans, and I keep saying that over and over again, but it's so important. I mean, just to be with that fan base. And I go out and I see a lot of shows during the off season of jazz clubs and stuff, and they're great. But, you know, their audience is about 50, 60 people or less. I go to work, and we've got 40,000, you know, or
right.
48,000, or on a regular night, 28,000, 30,000. I mean, when you think about it, I'm not the show. I'm behind the scenes, but I'm still part of that. I mean, it's just incredible, the numbers and the millions of people that I've been around over 29 years.
And what you probably really don't think about is when, for example, a child comes up to you with a baseball and wants an autograph, have you ever thought some of those kids will sleep with that baseball under their pillow all night?
I don't have a statistic on that, but I do have a stat where I've had, probably a couple dozen at least kids that are youngsters that are taking piano lessons because I spent some time with them. And they'll come up and they'll say, I'm taking piano lessons now because of you. I mean, is that? So
I've had
kids come up and tell me that they're playing. And then I tell them, well, if you're around after the game, come on up and I'll pop you up on the bench. And I do that.
Oh, that's fantastic. And, wow.
One young gentleman, Evan, 10 years old, came over specially just to meet me because he wants to be a ballpark organist. I put him up on the bench after a game, and this kid could play.
Wow.
I mean, way better than me at 10 years old. Anyway, the video got put up on my Facebook page. Fox 10 saw it. They came and did a feature on Evan, and the feature not only went up on Fox 10, but National Fox got a hold of the feature, and they played it all over the United States. I had friends and family from all over the United States going, hey, I just saw you on the news with the kid.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow. Now, that's a good story. That's heartwarming. That's what keeps you back, going back every day.
Oh, yeah. And somebody said, oh, he's going to take your job. I said, no, he wants to be the Dodgers organist.
Right. He probably wouldn't dare. This is hallowed ground, by the way. We're speaking with legendary baseball organist Bobby Freeman. By the way, Bobby, what is your official title with the Diamondbacks?
Well, I'm actually, let's say, a Arizona sports organist is what I go by. So, because I do baseball. And then over the years, I did hockey, I did Coyotes, I did the Suns. I actually played at America West Arena when we opened it in 92-93. I played the championship games, and I did about six, seven seasons for the Suns on and off. It depended on budget. It depended on who the game ops person was. Some, you know, you do have people in the business that, you know, I don't like the organ, you know, so I was in and out. So that happened with the Suns, and I don't have any regrets about it or anything. It's just the business. So I was in and out with the Suns. I was in and out with the Coyotes. Diamondbacks, I was always there. This is, you know, south, other than the COVID year. But even then, I was there because they had me on the computer. So I've been solid with the Diamondbacks. So, and we made some adjustments during COVID, you know, as my position as far as full-time with D-backs. So what it is now is that I play all of the games out of spring training, and then I play all the home games. So now I just go by Arizona, I guess. I didn't put legendary in there. Somebody else did.
But that was me.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm calling it what it is, okay?
Yeah, and actually, I did over the years. I did many years where I was at Turf Paradise Racecourse, which is my wife's game. She's the horse handicapper. So during the special race days in the early 2000s, I played the organ. We put the organ out by the finish line, so I would be the music for the day. So I actually have done thoroughbred horse racing as well. Matter of fact, I'm calling you from there right now. My wife's upstairs winning. She's cashing in.
All right.
Yeah, that's my wife's game, and we enjoy it. So now with my I'm kind of, you know, contractor now, and that I can go out and just say Arizona sports organist. So I play all the sports.
Okay. Well, a great answer to a somewhat a fair question, I suppose.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's a little two-parter here. What got your interest in playing for baseball games, and how did you get your start, as in musically? So perhaps I asked that one backwards.
And that's fine. I do that all the time. So when I was 18 months old, 2 years old, my parents would take me to a roller rink in Cleveland, Ohio, and the organist was the music. And we had a piano in the house, which I was tinkering with, and I always wanted to play the organ. I'd look at the organ guy in the glass booth, and I'd go, that's what I want to do. So I'm a lucky person because I knew at age three what I wanted to do for my life, and never knowing I could do it full time. I figured, you know, I could do it once in a while. So when I was 10 years old, my parents bought me an organ. And then by the time I was 13, I started playing professionally at the roller rinks. So I was a professional musician from 14. I had to be driven to work. So I started in roller rinks in Cleveland, and then I went. I wanted to do more than just roller skating because it's a very strict type of playing beat and beats per minute and everything. Because I also played for roller competition. I did state, regional, and national competitions. I played 2 years nationals up in Crystal Palace in Las Vegas. And so I did as much as I could do in roller skating. I recorded 5 CDs, but I wanted more than that. So I got into restaurants, and then when I was playing in the restaurants, people were going, "Boy, you have a really good beat. We just can't sit here." And they get up and start dancing, and that put me into ballroom dancing. And that's how I moved out here to Arizona, because of Sun City. They had the private country clubs and dance clubs. So I was not involved in sports at all. Matter of fact, we had an organist in Cleveland, and I talked to him, but I never wanted to play there because it was snowing half the time. It was so cold.
Right,
don't want this job. I don't want this job. And it doesn't pay very much, you know, so I wasn't interested. So I moved out to Arizona in 87, got involved with the dance clubs, and then my wife was executive secretary at a large fence company here in Phoenix, and the Firebirds came to her office, and they were ticket hawkers, you know, group sales. So when they invited me and her and the boys out to the ballpark, they asked what I did. She goes, "Oh, he plays the organ." And then that's how I started. And I tell the kids when I talk to them about going out and being successful in life, you have to take some jobs where, you know, you volunteer. When you volunteer for an organization or your church or your synagogue, your library, whatever, it says a lot about you. And then when you go out for your first jobs, it's no money or low money. And that's how the Firebird started. And then look, you can see how it turned out. So my sports thing started just by going out with the company and playing their barbecue. And then my wife saw on a Sunday morning in the Arizona Republic that the Suns were doing organ auditions. So I went down just to see. I wanted to see what kind of organ they got. That was a bit nosy.
Well, sure.
And how much they were going to pay. And there's about 20 people there. And I told them right off the bat, I said, "Look, I'm just here nosing around. I can't really take the job. I have my contracts up at Sun City, and I couldn't play all the games." Anyway, they threw all of us up on the bench, and I get the call that night that we picked you. And I said, I appreciate that, but I looked at your schedule. I can only do like 13 games. And so they worked with me, and it was fun. It was fun. It was a great experience. I really liked playing. I love baseball, of course, but basketball and hockey was really cool. Well, especially basketball, because you play offense, defense. You don't have to stop.
Right. Right.
You know, when the puck drops at the ice rink, you got to stop, like, now. You know, and then baseball, the same thing. I always tell people, the thing about Major League Baseball or any level of baseball, you have to know when not to play. Because you don't want that umpire looking at you, you know, looking back. Hey, knock off that music. So, but basketball was cool because they want you to make noise the whole time.
Right. Well, we've heard you play countless baseball games. What keeps you changing the variety of brief tunes during a game? Is there a checklist, or do you just use your imagination, or both?
Both. But every game I go to, I try to come up with a what I call a new intro to a chant. So the new thing now is it's a little tough for me to come up with new songs because people, "Oh, what new songs are you going to play this year?" Well, a lot of it, you know, is rap beats, words. I don't do words. Okay, so that knocks me out. And then, you know, there's country and stuff, and that does have melodies here and there, but it's a little tough. So what I've done is taking songs that better part of our fan base will know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, like take the song Jump, you know, don't. Dun, 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 dun. And then I go into Let's Go D-backs. So that's been my new hook, is to do songs with famous lead-ins and then, or what we call riffs, and then go into a chant. And that I freshen up every game. And then sometimes I get a lot of my songs ideas from, we'll go out and to the casinos, you know, play little games out there with the slot machines, and they pipe in the music, and I'll go, oh, that's a good one, and then they type it into my phone, and that's why I feel I keep the program really fresh. And then I do have a song that I get to play before the game starts, so I change that up every game. So, you know, what's really interesting is my favorite song of all times, you think it's taking me out to the ball game, but it's Glenn Miller's In the Mood from the 40s.
Right.
And every time I play that, you could put your phone up on video and there'll be at least three couples, young couples out there, they'll start dancing to it up in the sandlot. It's got a beat that is so catchy. It's unbelievable how that works. And so I enjoy that. So I would say I try to play music from the 40s all the way up to the top 40s. So I'm a little limited in the top 40s now, dropping some names. I mean, Taylor Swift was really good for me. She came out with a lot of songs that have melody, if that makes sense. You know, you Shake It Off and all the. I could play it, and the kids will walk up to me and say, I know that song. And Disney was good to me, Under the Sea, the last few years, Be Our Guest. So, you know, I try to find different genres, and it just makes me feel so good when the kids come up and go, I know that song.
Well, you'll get a kick out of this. My favorite song of all time is Green Onions.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, and we just said, of course, yeah.
That's very keyboard heavy. I mean, that's, and I'd love to hear you play that someday.
Yeah. I've played it a lot. Sure, that's a standard Hammond. Hey, I have to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot now. I'm going to reverse the chairs.
All right.
I'm sitting in your chair. Did you have an organist come out to your, I want to say, 161 refill?
I was in the 107th, 107th Air Control Squadron.
Oh, you were in 107th?
We're sister units. Pat McMahon was in the 161st.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm close. I'm in the family. All right. Cousins, brothers, sisters, whatever. Yeah, because there were a few Labor Days, 4th of July's, and where they had the hamburgers and hot dogs and popcorn.
Family Day.
And then there you go, family. So I came out. I did three or four of those, I think, out there. But I believe that was 161.
Well, here, I'll shoot this one at you real quick in a similar sort of thing.
I'll get back in my chair. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, this is my spot. Thanks for keeping it warm.
Okay, yeah, right. Yeah.
For Family Day, we would always have, and I'll tell you the reason here in just a second, the Phoenix Suns Gorilla would always show up for Family Day at the 107th, and that's always around Christmas time, so you get the kids and everything. Well, the Gorilla would show up. Because the Gorilla was a member of our squadron.
Oh.
And I will not reveal his identity, but he was
in
our squadron.
Yeah, but yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
now,
we won't say, yeah.
The guy was just the quietest guy in the world, but when he put that costume on, he just, it was crazy. And the mixed reaction between the kids was great, because he'd come in, half the kids would run right at him, the Gorilla, half the kids would run to their mothers, Mommy, Mommy.
Yep, very normal. Well, people do that with Santa Claus.
You're right.
With Santa Claus. Yeah, I raised three, and I had one that was deathly afraid of them. It happened.
You know, they start crying, and you get embarrassed. The kid just wants to get off the lap.
I was very fortunate in those days in the 90s, now in the 90s, further back, when I was with Firebirds, the families from Kosovo were flown in, and they didn't know a lick of English, and it was right around Christmas time. But I'd start playing Jingle Bells and everything. I realized that the Christmas music was universal. They would sing in their language.
Yes, Jingle a lot Bells of it is. There are a lot of...
It was...
Go ahead.
We had that connection then, you know?
Yeah, there were a lot of songs, Christmas songs. I was brought up in Germany. And we had a lot of the same songs, just, of course, the lyrics were different, very close.
Yeah.
But, it's amazing what you can find that, you know, in different Eastern European countries. Who would have thought that Czechoslovakia would play Silent Night, you know, and that's, well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, music is universal. Music is universal. We know that.
It is. Well.
And that's how I feel about it at the ballpark, is that, you know, when I'm playing my rally chants and my riffs or my little music riffs. I have so many people come up to me and go, oh, they'll go play In the God of the Vita. Yeah, I get that every night. So, okay. And instead of being snarky or anything, I just go, I'll get it in. And then I go, da, 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 let's go, D-backs over there. And then lots of times they'll come back, hey, thanks for playing it, you know. And that way we, and well, the other thing that Diamondbacks have added to the program is the DJ. And I love it. People think it's the opposite. And I go, no, because I do my opening at the ballpark. And then later on, before first pitch, they feature the DJ because we're playing different stuff. This is great. You do that stuff, I'll do my stuff. And then also the DJ really can't play during play because, again, you're watching a pitch clock. And during play, it's mostly the rally chants. So DJs don't do rally chants. So we work together so well. I love having the DJ there, but a lot of people go, you know, well, are you okay with that? And they go, oh, definitely, definitely. Well, it's a different voice.
There's a whole angle that you're talking about there. I've been a DJ forever, and when I would have a band, in other words, I would play during their breaks. And
yes.
That was a whole different thing because I could do what I wanted, although I would make sure that I did not step on their genre of music, you know. I didn't want to.
Right, you did something, yeah, that they don't do. Exactly.
Speaking with Bobby Freedman, organist for the Diamondbacks, we're talking about small events. I'm going to go large. What was the most exciting event of your career, need I ask? But there could be a few.
Whoa, the 2001 World Series victory parade. They put the organ up on the back of a flatbed, and I played live throughout the whole parade. There was estimates of 400,000 to 500,000 people throughout the whole parade route, which I totally believe it was. And then the backstory on that was on the parade was a couple weeks later, I had a malfunction with the foot pedal, one of the foot pedals on the organ. So I took it into the shop. At the time, I had a van with a lift gate and, you know, I had an organ at the ballpark, but then this was my business organ. So I took it in to get serviced real quick. And all of a sudden, the tech comes out of the back room. He goes, hey, what's this? And he had a handful of confetti. And I said, oh, that's from the World Series parade. Apparently, the confetti had worked itself, you know, into the crack of the organ. And he had like 10 pieces of confetti. And I said, oh, that's from the World Series parade. And he goes, oh. He goes, can I keep this? I go, yeah. So I'd say that's probably my biggest gig that I can remember.
Well, we're talking about your equipment, you know, the pedals and all that. Do you have any influence on the type of equipment you operate at the ballpark?
100%. They totally trust me. So we have had, this is, I'm on my third organ and probably fourth keyboard at the Diamondbacks over these 29 years. So anytime something needs to be replaced, they just go out and get what you need and let us know. And fortunately, I have worked for every organ and keyboard manufacturer as a representative over my career. So I have connections where I can get the instruments at a real good cost. It helps the budget of Diamondbacks, and it helps me get what I want. They never question. The only thing every time when I've gone into the office and say, here's what I found, this is what it is, here's how much it is, they just say, are you sure this is this going to work for you? And you can get it for that price? I go, yeah. And they go, do it. Well, one thing I wanted to backtrack on, because I do take a lot of pride in it, because of starting to play the organ back before drum machines and different sounds of keyboards. It was just the organ, like church, and a roller rink. And mm-hmm. so I had to play the pedals. That was the bass, that was the rhythm, and all. More of the organists now that are throughout the industry don't play pedals. So, and I guess they don't have to. People probably don't know, but I take a lot of pride in that. And like I say, people just love watching your foot move like that. And so I consider myself not a keyboardist, but a real organist. And I enjoy that part of it. And then, of course, I had foot surgery. And wouldn't you know it, this is my left foot that I have to play the minutes pedals with. But I wasn't giving in. I played. And then when I got out of the cast, I had that boot. But the boot I could take off. I could take the boot off when I played. It hurt a little bit, but I wasn't giving in. I had to play the bass. I love it.
I was amazed when I would go to visit you at your keyboard during a game. You'd be playing and still speaking with me, and I just couldn't figure it out. And let's just throw one on top of that. From what I understand, you can't read music.
No, just a little bit, but people that don't know music at all, because I don't want them throwing music up in front of me and say, okay, play this.
Yeah.
But like, I kind of know the basic notes and chords because of I was in choir. And so, I can make, if you give me like piano music, and I can make the notes out pretty good. And then I'm looking at the chords. But yeah, I just say I don't read music because I'm not real good at it. My wife, you could put up classical music in front of her and she'll sit there and sight read it.
Wow.
And, I mean, to me,
oh, man.
If it doesn't have the chord chart up there and everything, the cheater, I can't make it out. So basically, it's like I'm colorblind too. So I don't read music, well, and I'm colorblind.
Well, you just got a few little things going for you there. That's going to be fun.
You know, I'm not going to be doing any F-35 or F-16
flying. Or electronics, having the colors of the wires and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, electrician. Give me the red and the blue wire.
And
green. Red and green.
Everybody's sweating, waiting for the bomb to go off. And the green one, Bobby, just the green one.
Yeah, like Hogan's Heroes. They're guessing. I think it's his one.
I think it's his fun, yes. No.
Yeah, both.
Oh, I can't read music either, and that's why I learned how to play the drums. And
there you go.
I could actually manage to speak to somebody while playing, but it's not totally easy, especially if you have a riff coming up or something or a fill. At that point, you got to tune out whoever you excuse me, and then you do your thing, and then now you can talk. But something for our audience to know. I have never seen Bobby without a smile on his face. Did you get that surgically installed or something?
That's very nice of you. When you're happy, it's easy. And it's something that when you are in the public or even with your family or anybody, when you have a smile on your face, no matter how much you might be in pain over a surgery or whatever's going on or something in your life, you put that smile on your face, and again, people are going to be attracted. They want to come back to points of pleasure. And I remember working in the food industry because I didn't just play the organ. I was a school bus driver. I was a volunteer fireman. I had a produce route. I helped manage restaurants for mom and pop operations. I worked for Howard Johnson's. You know, I was always out hustling, produce companies. Yeah, anything that I could do. I was a financial advisor for a while. I always tried different things, and I would say, well, if I wasn't a musician, but smile on the face. I remember a gal I was working with at Howard Johnson's, and a guy came up, was real upset with his meal and everything, was screaming at her. And I said, Cheryl, how do you just keep that smile on your face like that? And she goes, oh, they're not going to punch somebody with a smile on their face. And I went, oh, that's good. I'll use that one.
That's good thinking. No, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you just, that's the whole deal. And I appreciate you saying that to me, because that, again, that's one of my main accomplishments, I guess, in the daytime and the evening, where I want to appear happy and make somebody else's day a good day.
You know, it's a gift and a blessing. When you're tolerating things, like you mentioned the restaurant incident, you know, it takes a lot to keep a smile on your face when somebody wants to just tear you up, you know?
Yeah. You just have sometimes somebody yell something, you just laugh, you know. Now, I've been very fortunate. I only had one incident at the ballpark that was out of hand, and unfortunately the man, it was his bachelor party, so you could tell what it was, and the guys were going, hey Zach, take it down. Oh. So I did have to punch my button on security and just say, I need security, it's Bobby up in Sandlot, like that. And 15 seconds, I not only had five of our own security team, I had five MCSOs there too. And I mean, it was like a SWAT. They came down, and I'm not exaggerating, 15, 20 seconds. And they grabbed them and took them out of the area. And I kept saying, take it down. There's kids here. That's all I was saying to them. And everybody around was going, hey, you got to knock it off. And that's all I said to him. There's kids here. Please don't do that.
Well, the bachelor party, you know, alcohol is a factor.
Yeah, he was done.
Done. He wasn't getting there. He was done.
Yeah, my security team came up right away, and the supervisor said, Bobby, he's 86. His picture's on the wall. He will never be. If he's in this ballpark again, he's no trespassing. And that, I have to say, that's the only incident I had.
It's, well, that's good.
Over that many years, that's pretty darn good.
That's a good track record, for sure. We're speaking with Bobby Friedman, organist for the Diamondbacks, and back in the Firebirds days, and he worked his way up from meager beginnings. You sport your name and a special number on your Diamondbacks jersey. Please tell us about it.
I wear number 88, and that is because there are 88 keys on a piano.
Now, that's a good, cool, straightforward answer. I'm boring. I wear my birthday number on my jerseys. But
that's okay.
That's even better. That's pretty cool. Do you have any charities or special events that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. I've just been recently appointed on the board for the Arizona Baseball Museum. It is located in Mesa, Arizona, in the Lehigh District neighborhood. And it is the museum is dedicated to showcasing, exhibiting any aspect of baseball in Arizona for over 100 years. We're going to have exhibits on the Japanese internment camps, the Buckhorn bats, all of the spring training from way back in the day. The museum is opening to the public on February 21st. And again, it's the Arizona Baseball Museum. I'm on the board, and I have an organ and keyboard in the museum, just like the ballpark, and just donated. I purchased, along with another Secret Santa, a big Yamaha grand piano, and that will be sitting in the auditorium as well. So we can have music on certain evenings. We're going to be inviting school kids in and kids that are in music lessons that want to have a little showcase for their family and that. So we're going to also be a performing arts center. So very, very proud of being involved with the museum. And that gives me the opportunity to help be involved in the community even further year-round, being involved in the community year-round.
Well, I've been a bit of a historian throughout my life. I was the kid that I always would have a camera. You know, Rich, put the camera away. Yeah, now.
I did that to my mother all the time. Will you put that camera away?
Yeah, well,
and now I look at the pictures and go, wow.
And those same people, now they're saying, hey, man, you still got those pictures? Can I get a copy of that?
Exactly. Yeah. I lived that. Now I know it's all part of the thing, especially with, you know, phones. You know, people. I've always got a phone, and that's the other reason why they have this constant smile on my face, because You, I'd never know when somebody's taking a still or a picture, a movie picture of me. Or I had national broadcast. I remember Atlanta Braves were in town, and somebody just texted me and said, "Hey, we just saw you on the broadcast." I mean, you know, I can't be sitting up there, Mr. Grumpy. You know,
right?
So as soon as I come out the green door on the upper concourse, I'm on. I'm on. I put my Disney ears on. I learned that when I was around Disney for a while and, when I lived in Orlando. And I always say it's the Disney attitude. When people come here, they're here to get away from their troubles and everything. And so I picked that up a long time ago. As soon as I come through that green door, it's got to be happy time. People are at the ballpark to have a good time, you know. And I'm part of that. And I'm only part of that a little bit. But, you know, it's the players are the main reason people come. The GSRs that do such a terrific job around the ballpark, and the food vendors, the 50-50 raffle people, they're all part of this. And we all have to be happy. And they are. They do a great job. And believe me, I walk around the park. I get in early. I check things out. And I'm very proud of our staff at Chase Field and also at Salt River Fields, too. They're just terrific, from the parking people, the security, everybody. It's again, I'm fortunate enough to be at Salt River Fields all spring and then go right on in the Chase.
Well, you probably, you did bring this up earlier, the Firebirds games. I keep going back to those. Those were sweltering heat out there. I mean, there was no nice cover. You must have just lost your mind when you first walked into Bank One Ballpark when it was finished and the air conditioner kicked on.
Well, I lost my mind in 1993 when I heard that there was a ownership group talking about putting a Major League Baseball team here. And I go, are they nuts? I mean, I'm sitting on the Oregon at the Scottsdale Stadium. It's 112. I'm going, people get out of here. They go to Prescott. They go to San Diego. This is stupid. I never thought of air conditioning.
Yeah. It's a marvel and makes you wonder why to this day teams – in cold weather markets still build a stadium open air. I don't get
it. Yeah, my wife says that all the time. Charlene goes all the time, they're building a new stadium here, and then they don't put a roof on it. Well, I know it's a cost factor, but geez, you know. Well, nothing worse than sports. Well, not all sports. Football's fine, but baseball in the cold. No, that's rough.
Well, the other one.
Salt River, it gets cold, but not snow.
The other one that still mystifies me, you get a place like, well, Seattle. You get the places where God basically built the place to be rained on 24/7, 364. I mean, it's always raining. And for baseball, that's detrimental. It shuts down the game, you know, indefinitely, or it might be a postponement or a six-hour delay or something like that. In that case, you know, in fact, Seattle, I just bring up the Mariners. They went from the King Dome, which was, well, a dome covered, to an open-air stadium. It just blows my mind.
Well, my son lived up there, and actually the way they have that shell, it works. They're okay. They're kind of half and half. They're kind of outdoor, but they can pull that shell across. So it's almost like an umbrella. So they kind of did it perfectly.
So it does protect the players in the field.
Yeah. They did a great job up there. But yeah, there's some other open air stadiums. I'm like, okay, all right. And high humidity and just the rain and the lightning and stuff. Yeah, I like where we're at. I was very happy to see that the Diamondbacks were able to work out the deal with the county and city and the state. And it's wonderful that we can stay in Chase Field. And of course, being in the position I'm at the ballpark, I get a lot of feedback, probably one of the most people in the organization, the feedback that I get, because people can come up to me and just talk, you know, and those, it's amazing, especially from our out-of-town guests. They'll go, this ballpark is fantastic, it's beautiful, oh my God, this is our first time here, and I'm taking this all in, because sometimes the media doesn't, you know, they say the ballpark's old and whatever, they don't like this and like that, that's okay. But I'm hearing really from the fans that are longtime fans and visiting fans. And I have the only complaint I ever heard, and it's a comment. You know, it's August. And remember, we went through last year, the year before, where it was 118. But they understood. Hey, do they have any air conditioning in this place? look, this is a huge building, and we're up against the. I can show you. I have solar on my house, and my bills were getting way up because the unit was cranking as hard as it could.
Sure.
So other than the ungodly heat here, the air conditioning has done very well, and they are making improvements to it as we speak. And the roof is fixed, and all, and, you know, things happen. You know, it's a 30-year-old house. You know, things happen. And that's the only time I've really heard people make comments of, God, it's awful hot in here. And I go, you're right. We know it. We know it. But it's on. That air is on as hard as it can go. And we're the owners, everybody's aware of it, and they're working on it. So it's not going on deaf ears. Other than that, though, I mean, the facility does. For its age especially, I think it looks great. And not just because I work there. You know, it's a beautiful facility.
It
We're
is.
We're lucky to have it.
It is.
We're lucky to have it.
We were invited to perform color guard for the first ever game. It was the last preseason game, March 29th of 98.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were there. It was raining out.
I think I walked out. It was sleeting out. It was like sleet.
Yeah, they had the roof closed. And we're thinking, my gosh, this roof is really a good deal.
It was so cold. Oh, my God.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Oh, I remember it like yesterday. But if we didn't have a roof, we wouldn't be playing. Yeah, we wouldn't have played.
No, the league probably wouldn't have approved a team to be here, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, you know, we were kind of born right after or at the same time when Milwaukee did actually the same company, I think, did the roof and the whole ballpark as Milwaukee and us. And so we came on about the same time. And, yeah, thank goodness for the roof. You know, Colorado, absolutely beautiful. No roof.
Yeah,
and up there it snows.
I've seen some games that, man, why aren't they calling this? They're about to build a snowman over there.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but it is pretty appealing in July and August because we have friends up there, so we've gone to a few games and they have a beautiful setup up there. You know, being right in town, downtown, and the views, the crisp air. I mean, summertime, yeah. Colorado's pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. You'll, of course, have the day or two in the summer where there's tornado warnings and it's, you know, high 90s, but that is the exception to the rule.
And when you're from Cleveland, we'd always say, if you're not liking the weather, wait a minute. You know, because with that lake, it changes. It can change at any moment.
Oh, that's just why they call it a lake. The thing is as big as an ocean.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, it's funny. Blue Moon knowed him. He was a pitcher from way back. And I remember the game, too. And we got fogged out. The fog was so bad, we had to stop the game.
Oh, my.
And they asked him what he thought about the fog. And he says, well, that's what you get for building the ballpark next to the ocean. That comment went everywhere. Lake Erie, right? Yeah,
yes.
Next to the ocean.
Oh,
yeah, it's so great.
Well,
we'll just write it off as he was being funny.
Well, you know, you know about Cleveland and the Browns. You know, they play in that stadium, and then the new one now. I call it new. I think it went up in 99. Like you say, everything's old now. The D-back stadium.
Oh, yeah, they're getting a new stadium now.
Again?
I know. Yeah, they're going to get and put it out in Berea, a suburb, and they different things they're talking about doing with the stadium they have now, where they kind of turn it over, work with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and have major concerts there. That works, you know, that could work.
Well, sure, sure. That's what the Cardinals
concerts they've had there the last few years have sold out. They do well, or implode it and do all redevelopment
start over
down there. Yeah, it just doesn't seem it's – yeah, but they're like 30 years too. So that seems to be about the lifespan for these larger venues.
Well, and they have contracts. Some teams have contracts. This needs to be in the top 5% of – that's how the Rams got out of St. Louis. You know, it has to be in the top 5% of the newest stadiums and this and that.
By the way, I do have a website that tells a lot of information on my career and booking opportunities, if you'd like. It's www.bobbyfreeman88.com.
Well, there's the 88.
There you go. Always working it in.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there'll be a short quiz afterwards. I remember it. It's the number of keys. Now, is that every keyboard or a standard keyboard, or are there exceptions?
Great question. That's only for the piano.
Okay.
The piano is 88 keys. Most of the keyboards are 61 notes. And I do have a larger keyboard that goes up to 76 notes. Electronic. Electronic is 61, 76. Pianos, whether they're spinet or grand, whatever size, those are 88.
All right. Well, thank you for that. You know, I've learned a few things from you today. This is why I invite folks as yourselves on the show. I want to learn something, and all of us do want to learn something, and I think we learned something today. Bobby, I'm going to jam you with this last question. It's a two-parter. I ask this of all of our guests. What's your favorite food, and what do you want for Christmas?
Chinese, and for Christmas, oh, God. It's just what, health? I'm on health for me and my family. Once people have gone through what we've gone through, it's a lot of stuff, and then to come out of it and keep going, and it's because of music is a big part of it. Music just is psychological. It's performing. It's the adrenaline, and the especially with health problems. Charlene sang with me for many years on the stage when we performed, and she would feel so bad going in there, your breast cancer survivor and all, and going in right after surgeries and performing. And, you know, we take a break, and she goes, I feel much better now. So I guess, again, Chinese food and having your health for Christmas. That's my gift, year-round gift.
Well, I've received similar answers to a lot just to share with you. A lot of people said they just want their family. They just want their family around. And
Sure. Since
most of the interviews I've done are with astronauts, at least six of them out of 27, they had the same answer. It's unique from their perspective.
Yeah.
They just want peace on Earth because they have been up at 125 miles, looked down at this globe. It's not a globe like on your office with political borders and all that. It's the only place in the universe where you can support life. And you look down and you just think, why can't they all just get along?
Everybody's on it. And we all have the same needs. We need water. We need air. And when you look at it, if you take all of the human stuff out of it, it's we're all here and we all have the same needs. Why not enjoy it and be happy and share it and help each other and just make it an enjoyable experience. And, you know, especially with me, I don't have a very dangerous occupation other than I'm all, you know, shoulders and back and all this stuff gone because of moving heavy equipment my whole life, which I don't have to do anymore. All my equipment's at the ballpark.
Nice.
But in the past, I had heavy speakers and organs. Sometimes I did three moves a day. I did a gig in the morning, gig in the afternoon, gig at night. And because of that, I guess I did end up in a kind of a dangerous occupation. I get teased about that. But thinking of an astronaut, oh, my gosh. I mean, can they even get life insurance? You know, I'm not kidding. You know,
that's a good point. You know, do they go to Lloyd's of London or what do they do?
because... Now, pilots can get licensed. I know they can get life insurance because I used to sell it. And but, you know, if you're a pleasure, like if I were to go up in an airplane right now with a friend of mine that does CAP, I can't. Your life insurance is not going to cover you.
Oh, that's interesting. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because you always say, hey, I can take you up for a ride. Well, I can't.
It's a high hazard thing. I think there's a clause. Even football players are not allowed to go skydiving, for example.
Well, sports people in general, that's in their contracts. Yeah, motorcycles, skydiving, parachuting, some of that. I think piloting, too. So I actually had a Honda Goldwing. I was a Goldwinger for 7 years, and we owned horses. We had them in our backyard. And as soon as I started with the Diamondbacks, I looked at Char and I said, well, we've had 7 years on the Goldwing with no accidents. We're lucky. And I love my horse. He was a beautiful Arabian and all. Had him 7, 8 years. And I said, but I don't want to be calling up the Diamondbacks and say, hey, I went off my horse and I'm going to be out for 6 weeks, or I wrecked my motorcycle. And plus I had the responsibility of my family too. The motorcycle wasn't the best thing in the world.
Right.
And you can get hurt in a horse instantly. You could just bound him in your backyard and get thrown and get seriously hurt. So I was glad I did what I did, but I knew there was a time when you just say, hey, you know what? I know I'm taking a chance in my car, but at least that's kind of a normal, you know, function that we have to do. So, the risk factor, you got to try to start eliminating that.
Bobby, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your experience, your stories with us.
Well, thank you for having me so much, Rich. It's just an honor. And I think the coolest thing here was the OTB today.
It's been just a wonderful conversation. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would know Bobby, there's always a smile on his face. I do not make this up. It is a fact. He's just a very pleasant person. And whomever he is employed with or shares his time with, they're totally blessed. And we are blessed. Bobby, thank you.
Thank you, Rich. We'll look forward to seeing you soon.
All right. You take care. And I'll be in touch.
Thank you. Go Diamondbacks.
All righty. Go D-backs. This is Sun Talk. I'm Rich Kirshner, your host.